Accession number 16848, Reel 3.
Mr. Cornish, Reel 3.
As I said, it was a temporary reorganized unit, and it became quite obvious that they do not intended us to go back to the front. And taking into consideration the nationalities of the people in that unit, it became obvious that they intended other destiny for us. And so it was. We moved northwards, then we arrived at a city called Sverdlovsk.
At Sverdlovsk?
Sverdlovsk.
In the Urals?
Yeah. Then Chelyabinsk and Sverdlovsk. We were put off the train there, not all of us, just part of us, about 40 or 50 of us were told to disembark there. And the station was called Chasha. It was a small station, a railway station. And from Chasha we marched for 4 days into the forests of Siberia. There was an escort with us. There was two soldiers with rifles. Curiously, just tied up with a string. So it was a toy weapon, actually, rather than something serious. But even so, we found ourselves in a place. We did not know exactly where it was. We knew it was Siberia. We knew we were behind the Ural Mountains. And the only thing to do was to sort of march to our destination. After 4 days, we arrived in a small camp, an organized camp. There were no wires around it. It was such a desolate place that obviously Russians relied on its geographical position, and were quite sure that from there people would not escape, because they did not know where to escape to and how to escape.
This is winter time, is it?
That's winter time. Snow 2 or 3 meters high. Beautiful country. Fir trees, mostly.
So this is the taiga?
What was, yeah. And in that camp, we're told that we are going to work. We're going to work for our food. We had to fulfill a norm, otherwise we'll eat according to the norm we fulfill. And the work this consisted of cutting down the trees, cleaning the branches off, and loading the large trunks onto railway wagons. Now the railway wagons were there, but of course there was no locomotive or anything like that. They were just stationary there. It was a very, very hard work. It was so hard that we worked in our shed sleeves in 40 degrees centigrade minus.
Were you being punished?
Well, it was a labor camp. It wasn't a concentration camp as such. It was a labor camp. We were fulfilling a function. We were working for the good of the Soviet Union and the war effort. We're cutting down the trees for some reason or other. And there was about 200 odd people in that camp. Some of them were there before we arrived, and they were there for quite a long time.
What was the name of this camp?
I can't remember. Can't remember at all that. It wasn't a very significant one, or the name wasn't that significant, because they would have registered. The workers, as I said, were very, very hard indeed, until you learned the technique. So there's a technique of doing everything. There was a way of positioning the trunks in such a certain way so that you can roll them up with minimum effort, using the tools as whatever they've had them, the hooks only, you know, plate them into the ends of the trunk in opposite places on the circumference, and that's a way of rolling them up. Only two people could do that, although the trunks were probably 30 or 40 meters long. Eventually we've learned this, but we've never fulfilled the norm, never ever. There was no way of doing this. Perhaps after a couple of years of practice, maybe we'll be able to do it. But strangely enough, they did not cut our rations, which were very meager anyway. We supplemented, I'm talking about Ilko, this friend of mine, and myself, by working in the kitchens as volunteers after to work. Which was working, from 8 o'clock in the evening perhaps to 1 o'clock in the morning, having to get up at 5 in the morning. But at least we could pinch some fat, some butter, strangely enough, some meat. Well, meat was very scarce, but potatoes were plentiful. To bring this back to our barrack and baked them on the stove. There are a lot of very ill people there after the years of this heavy work, and the blindness was affected of virtually everyone. No vitamins. There's a name for this kind of a blindness. It's a temporary one. Once you start eating, I think D vitamin is the one, but your sight returns. But the night blindness mostly. So we try to, the two of us, we try to help people, who needed food most, and we've started thinking and talking and discussing what next. Our young, fertile minds, we did not see the future here, obviously, and we try to find a way of escaping simply from them. Now, there was no way of escaping via the trains, because we didn't see any movement in that direction, that they're going to there's going to be a locomotive. Connected to the, attached to the, to these lorries. So we decided to walk away from there. Five of us got up 1 o'clock at night, and we simply walked in the opposite direction to which we came. As I said, there were no wires around the camp. There were no sentries, because they didn't need them. And we decided to just escape. Destination Chasha, that railway small railway station where we had to disembark previously. And this perhaps is a story in itself, our march through the snows of Siberia, from a village to a village, very small villages, some consisting of two or three buildings covered in snow virtually. Now I have to go back a little with this. In Russia, in these parts particularly, where the knowledge and education was extremely limited and poor to people, if you show something written on a piece of paper with a stamp on it, it was virtually a document which could save your life. I prepared such a document in the camp, and I used a stamp made from a potato on which were the most important things. That was a sickle and a hammer crossed, looked very official, telling five of us to report to a unit in Chasha. Well, to start with, we walked, but then we became a bit bolder and we requested a transport from the politruks of the village. Well, transport consisted of one horse and a sledge. Being soldiers in uniforms, it was easy to exercise the authority, you know, not to start with, but after two or three days, it worked. Now, eventually, we arrived in Chasha. At last, once we've lost our way, had to make a detour. And very near the town, a few hours before, I've noticed that my left arm was white and it was frostbitten. Now, you have to act very quickly. You have to massage it with snow, and sometimes you know it goes back to normal. Not in my case, it didn't. In Chasha, there was reasonable order there. And first of all, some young women in school took care of me and started, I forget what they were doing, but they were something, putting some sort of ointment on it. But then they said, well, there's a red equivalent to Red Cross unit here serving the military. Should I go? I should go there. There's a doctor there. This I did, and they took very good care of me, and they put some specific ointment that they have for this kind of thing, and a lot of bandages. And this, I'm saying this because this is significant in my story, because everybody realized I was someone who was hurt badly in the front. Now, then anyone with visible signs of wounds and disabilities had a priority to everything. Particularly food, because that's the only thing you think about in this situation: food and place to rest, to sleep. Not going into the details, we've boarded various trains going in the southern direction, eventually arriving at Chelyabinsk. It's a big city, and there was a lot of activity there in the city. The first thing I did, of course, is I went to what is it called in English? No, down. I had to have a bath because you know everything, all sorts of things are crawling on me. And they have this wonderful invention where they disinfect your clothing in Russia. It is a way of life. It's the main thing, you know, you go there, have disinfection. They disinfect you and your clothing and get rid of the old lice and everything. And then I walk the streets trying to find something to eat. And I've noticed a very strange thing. I've noticed white, red flag on one of the buildings. It didn't gel, it didn't, you know, register. It was something quite out of ordinary, how and why. So I went to the building and I met a man, a sergeant, in a uniform, which looked like a Polish uniform, because it was a Russian, obviously, uniform. And he had an eagle on his hat. And I asked him, "Are you a Pole?" He said, "Yes." I said, "What is happening? Why are you here?" Well, I said, "What? Don't you know? There was an amnesty. We are forming a Polish army here in Russia." So he told me quickly the story. But he said, "I do not," and I told him who I was, why I found myself in Chelyabinsk. And I said, well, if you are forming an army here, obviously that's my destination. I said, I wouldn't advise you to go to this place here because there's NKVD and the Polish officers together enlisting people. You have to have a certificate. But there are people from the concentration camps there, you know, from labor camps, from being sent, deported from Poland into Kazakhstan and other parts of the Russia. People who were either professional people, officers, policemen, post office workers, or institutional workers who could have been not convenient for the Russian administration. And they were deported. All these people were supposedly made free, and they had to have a certificate that they were released from whatever it was, concentration camp or labor camp or as they call them, Poshowek, the place of work. Without that, of course, he said, well, it would be a bit difficult for you because they might class you as a deserter. I said, well, what do I do? He said, I advise you to travel south on the route from Chelyabinsk to Tashkent in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. There are units which are being formed, the Polish units which are being formed, all along the way. And he said, they will not be as strict there as they are here in Chelyabinsk. Now, in Chelyabinsk, I said that five of us escaped. In Chelyabinsk, I was the only one who was left out of the five. They all got lost on the way. We had to sleep in separate places, and we decided that nobody's going to wait for anyone. We don't meet in the morning, early in the morning. Well, we just go on regardless. So there was a question of traveling south. Now, I could not travel in any official capacity. I could not buy a ticket, although I had still some money left from this work in Tours. And so it meant to develop some sort of excuse of joining some of the transports which were being moved south and backwards, obviously formation of new units or whatever. So I spent a couple of days there on this huge station, trying to find out what is going on. And eventually I came to a conclusion that there are transports consisting of a number of wagons or whatever, each being given a number and a destination. Now, destination was not known to the people who were in the transport. Obviously they were known to the people who were organizing it. But walking on the perrons and the trucks, the railway truck, here are sorts of snippets of conversation, and I realized that one unit was called 2020, moving south, somewhere south. Now, knowing that, I said to myself, okay, well, the way to do this is catch the next transport in similar direction, and if anyone asks you, where are you going, who are you, I have left behind from the transport 2020, I'm trying to catch up. Well, that seemed as a reasonable sort of assumption to make at the time. I had to get on the train, obviously not in such a way that nobody would notice me, which meant waiting for the last minute, and the train started to move on, jump on from underneath, mostly you know, the junctions from wagon to wagon. You ride for a bit on them and then move inside. That was the plan. On the main line, I've noticed a train which looked suspiciously different from Dulles, because it consisted of not cattle trucks but also the proper carriages. So I've decided that this is the train for me. It wasn't easy to get on it because it was guarded quite closely. So I got around that problem going on the back of the train and pretending to check the wheels of the train from one carriage to the next. You know, if you're doing something deliberately with an authority, nobody's going to question you, not initially anyway. Now the train started to move. I've jumped on the wagon. I jumped on the last carriage, got inside, and I got the shock of my life. It was a carriage which was full of Russian officers. The first compartment, which was the nearest to the place when I got onto, had only two occupants, colonel and a major. Well, there was no way of backing out of that, so I entered that compartment and I sat on the bench. And it was the Russian sleepers, which consist of three congregations of benches. During the day you lift the middle one upwards and you can sit on the bottom one. the Nazi lowered it and then can sleep on all three condemnations. And they looked at me with great suspicion. I was still in the uniform. So I just sat in the corner trying to make myself inconspicuous, not moving, not talking, not anything. And eventually this major asked me who I was. Well, I told him my story. There was a transport that left 2020. I'm desperately trying to catch up with it. And that went on for some time. There was something quite different about the appearance, the attitude, and the way they're asking questions. That went on for a bit. The night came, I popped on the top bench, slept the night. In the morning, conversation started in earnest. He started asking more questions. Very guardedly, I sort of told him my story, you know, about the front line, the unit being disintegrated and moving to Moscow and being into the, getting in the place where they tried to reform the units to fight Germans and, you know, this and that and that.
Did you tell them you'd been to the labor camp?
No. No, I didn't know that. I told them the story as up to the Chelyabinsk, nothing beyond that. And their attitude changed, gradually it changed. And they started to talk more friendly. Asked me if I was hungry. They had a lot of provisions in the luggage and stuff I haven't seen for months. And well, this journey lasted quite a long time because it was 5 or 6 days journey through a very desolate part of Russia going south. Stops very, very infrequent, and eventually we got quite friendly. You know, then I've noticed one significant thing: they had no guns. The
holster,
the holsters were empty. Well, I'm trying to condense this, but there were very funny situations there, and eventually it turned out that they were not Russians, but they were Uzbekis who were sent from the front, from the unit, which was not reliable. They were not reliable. They were sent back to the country of the origin.
So they were Uzbeks?
They were.
So did they look Eastern?
Not particularly. No, they were. Well, all Russians look different from anybody else. So, they were, if they were Chinese, they would say, "Right, you are Chinese."